This is Packet Pushers Weekly, the greatest ever podcast on data networking, because Packet Pushers Weekly is where real engineers get together to talk nerdy about networking. Located in the hot aisle, wedged in between the server and the storage racks, one row over from that cupboard where all the cables and mysterious items go that we've always got, but we're actually not sure why we're keeping them. Yeah, well, that's about where we are, diving on the technology issue that matter for today. And we'll be diving from the 10-meter diving board because we have no fear. Packet Pushers is a place where no one has to speak in terms that business people understand. Nerdy is the normal, deep dive is the baseline, and you can smell the fumes of the virtual whiteboard markers in your ears. Today's show is a sponsored show with Hewlett-Packard Networks. And we've talked many times with Hewlett-Packard over the last few months covering the different aspects. And you know that HP has a full spectrum portfolio. They've got routers, they've got their campus, they've got their SDNs, they've got everything that you need to be able to put together an end-to-end portfolio from a networking company. But the part that we haven't talked about up until now is BYOD and mobile technology. And joining us today is Giuliano Forte. Say hi, Giuliano, and tell people a little bit about yourself.
Hi, all. I'm Giuliano Forte. I'm an IMC product manager and BYOD product manager at AL. And I'm responsible for Access Policy Manager. It'd be great to be here today to speak about BYOD Access Policy Manager for multi-vendor and wired and wireless in a converged campus. Thank you.
No worries. And that's important too, right? Now, BYOD is no longer just about being to the wireless and or wired. They're two of the same thing. And that's a big part about what we want to talk to today. And so with that note, also with us is Chris Young. Chris, tell people a little bit about yourself.
Thanks. It's nice to be back. My name is Chris Young, at Netman Chris on the Twitter. I am a consulting technical marketing engineer here at HP Networking. And it's nice to be back to actually talk about what I'm passionate about, which is policy management and making sure that, you know, networks run properly.
Absolutely perfect. And of course, not forgetting Mr. Ethan Banks. How are you today, sir?
Oh, doing good. And BYOD is one of those things I'm interested in from the standpoint it's matured, and it's not just, oh, it's a concept, it's a thing. It's now something we can have infrastructure built around and security policies that are robust and mean something. So I'm looking forward to this chat.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you for joining us. It's great to have you here as always. So let's kick off the discussion first about what are the scenarios where we're starting to look at how BYOD and mobile access is put together. Giuliano?
Yes, thanks. And if you think about a few years ago, we had .1x MAC authentication. Basically, it was user authentication because companies, they didn't think about what kind of device you are bringing to the network, because company, they were providing the device, and the only concern is who is accessing my network, okay? And today, you talk about .1x with personal device, you talk about web auth authentication, you talk about MAC authentication with web portal together for guests, for employees, for contractors, and you show that HP solution can convert campus because doesn't matter if the user connects to the wired or wireless network.
Okay, so wired and wireless is converging, right, as time goes by. The days of it just being, you know, you connect to the wired network and the people who connect to the wireless network come through a completely different firewall and security policy. We're talking about converging those together?
Yes, absolutely.
That's a great point. Is part of the idea behind Converged Campus is that we don't want to really worry about is it wired or wireless or, you know, two cans and a string. It shouldn't matter anymore.
Yeah, should be the same whether you're on fiber channel, Ethernet, or wireless.
Sorry. Not fiber channel. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on, Greg. but really we're concerned with, you know, the who, what, when, where, and how.
Yeah.
The how being, how are you accessing the network, right?
It shouldn't matter how you're accessing the network, though. Your access policy should be the same regardless.
Maybe, right? Because if it's you're coming in on a wireless for maybe some more secure, wireless just by its nature, it's wireless, right? It could, in theory, there could be some kinds of things going over. You want intellectual property that you don't want going through the air because you're afraid somebody's going to sniff your traffic wirelessly and steal it, those kinds of things. So the point is not that, you know, you could have the same policy, but the point is now we have something to grab onto to actually as a trigger, as a piece of metadata about you and as how you're coming in and being able to decide based on that metadata that what do we want to do with you?
Right. So normally what happens is people just plug a desktop into the Ethernet and they've got full access to everything. There's no restrictions.
Absolutely.
We could probably say that 802.1x has comprehensively failed. I don't know of anybody who's managed to make it work sustainably.
I think on the wired side, that's fair to say, and going back in time when I was young, I was involved in some early projects where, you know, even if you go just beyond, just all the way back to Windows XP, right? Yes. Previously, that I would argue was one of the most spectacular reasons of why we failed, was because Windows had a dual supplicant model, right? And because of that, you would then have things where waiting for 802.1x to authenticate, your Windows supplicant would actually completely bomb out and authenticate you against cache credentials, meaning that you didn't get your login scripts, you didn't get your GPO, your global policy updates from Windows, all those things. Mm-hmm. And so all of the other policies that you had completely failed. So it was just a spectacular failure all around.
Yeah, it's not that way. I mean, I tend to agree with you, Chris, that for wired, no one's doing 802.1x that I'm seeing. But wireless, it does tend to show up more in modern Windows environments where it's nice and tightly integrated and you're using it, but you don't even realize it once you've got it configured.
Absolutely. WPA2, I think you have to use 802.1x. Or you can do, I think, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. And
in a business, I don't see it ever not 802.1x.
Yeah, and the other thing is great for wireless because when connected to the SSID with WPA2 enabled and .1x, you pop up, okay, say, insert your username and password, and it'd be pretty simple for the users to connect to the network. Okay, you don't need to go to the settings and configure, okay, so I need to phase one, phase two, and other configuration. So most of people today, they use personal devices and bring your tablet to the network, say, hey, I want to connect to the network, you know. So I don't have a cable to connect to my iPad or my Android device or Windows tablet, and how can I connect, you know? So if you bring security to the wireless, it'll be pretty simple for the user standpoint. That's the majority of BYOD or policy manager, is for the users, it'll be pretty simple to access the network.
So I got a follow-up question to kind of one of the introductory ideas here. I mean, Chris, I think you were pointing out it might not be who is accessing the network as much as how they're accessing the network. And I guess the context of my question is this. So many of the discussions that have been around campus security and BYOD have been, we want to know who you are. We don't care how you're coming on the network so much. As long as we know who you are, we know how to wrap security around you and assign you a policy and that kind of thing. Are you making a distinction there?
I think so if you look at how, from a networking standpoint, we usually look at policy constructs, you know, a lot of the times it comes down to what VLAN do I put you in, quite honestly, and then you get into what kind of an ACL you have. So if it's a how and a what device are you coming in on, and how wired or wireless, now I have the ability based on those two pieces of data to be able to say, hey, you know, Ethan, if you're plugged into the network, I'm giving you full access, but if you're coming in over this other way on your own iPad, I'm going to have a distinction and be able to take the same person and give you a totally different class.
And if you're
of
coming
service
in over the internet, you get a completely different policy.
Absolutely.
So there's distinction in, yes, by your ID, but also by the device you're using, because we may or may not trust that device, and also by your point of origin, and that we may or may not trust the network that you're coming from, internet case in point.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, and also when I say where, it could be where are you actually plugging into the network. So within our policy construct, we can say that these switches are dealt with like this, and these other ones are dealt with like this. So if you're plugged into a switch in accounting, which is someplace you should probably never be, as an engineer, or even worse, marketing. Did I say that out loud?
That's not part of the evil acts of marketing here.
Yeah. So I can say it. I'm in marketing. So we can then make a different policy decision based on where physically you're connected to the network from a wired standpoint, or physically where you're located as from a wireless standpoint, right? So it gives us all that flexibility. Now, again, you want to do the old Einstein quote, keep things as simple as possible and no simpler. Right, so you don't want to overcomplicate your network access policies, but you need to make sure that we have the constructs and the different pieces of metadata to be able to actually grab onto and make these policy decisions, which is, I think, what we've done a really good job at.
If you talk about the access policy for wired and wireless, is very important to know what kind of device as well as connect to the network, because the behavior of the users, they are different using a PC and using a tablet or a phone to connect to the network. And for the administrator, when you have some issues specifically for a device type or a vendor that you want to kick out all kind of the device not connected to the network to avoid issues in a period of time or week or whatever. So if you know, okay, I will create a policy right now that so people using this kind of device will not be able to connect to the network until vendor you fix the problem of the device or the operating system, you know.
Okay, so we've laid out sort of the map of the use cases and the scenarios of what it is that we want to achieve. Now what we probably need to sort of start picking the scab of is how do we use technologies to make those use cases to activate that, right? So I know that, you know, when we're running web portals or when we're trying to get people to log on, how are we going to start putting these policies into action? What are the key triggers that we can use to form the technologies together, like at a technology level, to recognize that I'm Greg or that my workstation is legitimate? What do we do there?
So I think, to maybe rephrase that a little bit, part of it is how do we tell what you are, what kind of device you're coming in on, right? Fingerprinting, right, is how we commonly in the policy look at that. And from the fingerprinting standpoint, really the first thing that we can look at is the Mac OUI. So what we're trying to do is passive fingerprinting wherever possible, because what in a lot of cases, you from a management operations side, the last thing the operations team wants is to have to manage agents on everybody's devices that they don't own. So we need to try to look at passive technology. So one of the first things we can use is Mac OUI.
Yeah, so the agent technology comprehensively failed in 802.1x. We asked all the, Microsoft tried to put it in and it failed. We know it doesn't work.
Yep, there's still good reasons for having it in some cases, right? But they're few and far between. And what you don't want is you, Greg, consultant guy, comes in. Are you going to let me put an agent on your PC, on your laptop, on your tablet? No,
yeah,
probably not. It goes both ways, right?
Yeah, it does.
So the first thing we'll use is the Mac OUI, right? And we all know Mac OUI, it's the first bits are vendor specific in theory. So what we actually have done is we've taken that list and we can say that this means that this specific range is a Cisco IP phone. This is a Google tablet. This is an iPad. This is an iPhone range. You know, those kinds of things, right? So that's one way, but we all know from a security standpoint, not that hard to spoof a Mac address.
No.
Right?
Trivial.
We have a lot of crazy angst outside, you know.
Yeah. That's kind of like Hollywood, hacking technique right there.
I love it that this is an audience where I can say that and everybody goes, yeah, you're totally right. I'm not the only guy who's done it. explain that to your mom. So the next thing we'll use is actually DHCP options. So when a DHCP request goes out, there's actually in client options 55, there's a specific order that different operating systems and different types of devices will actually request the options that it wants to see from the DHCP server. So we can use that as a fairly good way to be able to identify what the device is. And that's not easy to spoof, right? It's a lot harder to spoof that. The problem with that is if you look at from an iOS device type, everybody running the same operating system will have the same DHCP client packet coming out, right? So you'll end up with an iPhone, an iPod Touch, possibly an Apple TV, second and third generation, an iPad that all will be identified as an iOS device.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Which is still, that's a pretty good thing to do. If we can say, these are all Android devices, these are all Apple devices.
Well,
maybe
you need
that's
to do
enough.
That because the security posture you might have towards an Apple device, which is, consistently more secure than an Android device so far to this point in time, you might want to put your Android device into a different jail so that it gets scanned for viruses, or software validation or something like that compared to say, an iPhone device.
Absolutely. And then the other thing that allows us to do is because this technology is happening early on, this allows us to do things like, say, from a policy standpoint, which is where we get into this captive portal, the web auth, is to be able to actually have a custom page just for Apple users. So we can treat the people who use Apple super special. And we can have a nice little Apple logo displayed because we've already identified that they're an Apple device type. Hmm. Or we could put the Android little green alien guy or so on and so on and so on. Right, so we can start to the web portal that we display to these people. We can do different things with, which is a good thing. So the last one that we have is HTTP. So we'll actually use the HTTP user agent as the tiebreaker. So when you hit the web portal at that point in time, your browser is actually advertising itself through the client agent and will say, "I am iOS running on iPhone 5 point version 2, whatever," and that's part of the HTTP request string that goes into the portal. So we'll capture that as well and go, now that I know it's in the Apple address range, the DHCP option client 55 or client options are telling me it's an Apple iOS device, and the HTTP will tell me that it's not just an iOS device, but actually it's an iPhone 6, for instance.
Yeah. Yeah, you can start to get that. You can get that from the Safari headers. It's still forgeable, but it's a reasonably good indicator.
It is, right? And it's one of those things in security that it's, at the end of the day, if someone wants to try hard enough, they will get in.
Yeah. Right?
All this stuff is forgeable, but what do you really have that's worth it that somebody's going to go to all that trouble?
Yeah, they'd have to change their MAC address to look like an iDevice, start mapping their Safari things, and they'd have to know that you're looking at that, and then you're still going to be scanning for content. So, for example, we're talking here about HTTP redirect, which is capped of portals, I guess.
Yep.
Right?
Well, and that username and password thing.
Mm, yeah.
You're going to need that as well.
Yeah.
Right? So
you might just say, because what you're trying to achieve here is this combination of policy. So if you're an Android device, then you want to start checking if the Android device is before version 3 because they're known to be, you know, really insecure. And then you might say, your Android device is just too old, you can't join my network, right? Or you might say, okay, well, you're Android 4, now you can hit the portal and do the login, and then you start to get through. It's a combination, a stacking up of security confidence over time as you validate each of these levels.
I'm going to say it, Greg. It's defense in depth.
Yeah. 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 No, you know, too much effort wasted would barely be enough.
Yep.
Yeah, that sort of thing. Yeah, no, it does make sense, right? In the sense that you want to take advantage of everything you can to recognize and to build that up. The trick is not to get too carried away and overdo it.
And that's where, you know, part of what we, when we're talking to customers about it, is to make sure that, yeah, keep it as simple as possible, but no simpler. Like, make sure you have the policies in there. What I've seen where this goes wrong is you give people all the nerd knobs and they'll try to twist every one of them. And then you just sit back and you're like, wow, that failed spectacularly.
Engineers don't do that. What you're talking about.
Engineers never do that. Yes. Never. Never.
I have been guilty of looking at a console and seeing all the nerd knobs and going, I'm going to figure out what every single one of those do. And then sitting with the manual and figuring out what every single one of them do. Now, I don't always, you know, turn the knobs because that would be silly. I would never do that. But yeah.
In a lab, yeah. It's the people will always do what you don't expect them to do. It is the way it is. But yeah, so we try to, from a recommendation standpoint, you know, try to think about what your policy needs to be. And do you really need to treat iPhones and iPads differently? Maybe you do, but you probably don't.
No.
Maybe you want to dump those all. And do you need to treat all the phones and tablets, all BYOD differently from different vendors? You know, your Android example is spot on. Anything before Android 3, maybe you do want to treat that differently from a security standpoint.
Yep.
But everything else... it's a mobile device.
Yeah, because you don't want a compromised device getting through your captive portal.
Yep.
Or a device which is known to be easily compromised getting past your portal, because many of your users won't care in certain types of companies. On the show notes we've talked to, you've also talked about wireless location aware. I haven't seen that one before. Explain that.
Yeah, I can explain that. We have a new technology that we are developing called location aware.
So we actually recorded a show on this in Barcelona. This is the Cupid.
Okay, we did.
And Yarnin, for anybody who wants more on that, you can refer back to that show.
Good comment that people can go there and watch that they understand what we are doing. But with BYOD and Policy Manager, what does it mean, location where, is you can track where is your user. For example, you can have a school, okay, how many people has been in the library using iOS device, or how many people using Android device. And you can have this kind of information to have analytics to address that, say, oh, most of people, they go to library, they are using iOS device. Mm. And you can say, oh, why, you know? And you can customize portal in the library more for iOS device than other device. Okay, and you can push more information to the devices in an iOS format, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's a cool feature to have together with authentication part and the policy manager, because you track the user.
So what we're saying here is it's not just who the person is, where they're plugged into a network, and what kind of a device they're using. You can also say now physically where they are with that wireless device and modify policy based on that as well.
Exactly. Yes.
That's not new conceptually. I mean, we've had that kind of technology around in different solutions from different vendors, but it's always been it's so wonky to try to figure out where the person actually is, you know, triangulation and all that. It's been pretty weak. And I think, Chris, going back to just my recollection of recording that show, this wireless location awareness is I mean, it's not pinpoint, but it's like within a couple of meters of where that
2 meter or less.
Yeah, 2-3 meters, something like that. Yeah, it is pretty pretty amazingly accurate.
Which means it is viable to actually make a policy decision based on physical location.
Absolutely, and that's where, you know, where things are going to start getting more interesting going forward. So all this is part of the IMC family of stuff, right? It all lives inside that. So the EAPI, there is a RESTful interface that allows you to start manipulating those data, and you can start pulling things out. And even in my nights for fun, doing Python. So I'm actually developing a location-aware Python script just as a proof of concept, which is honestly, I'm playing a game of stay in the circle. That's all that I'm doing is I'm raising an alarm. An audio alarm to say when this particular device steps outside of a 2 meter range, 2 meter radius circle, so 4 meter diameter, I want to know that. So now I've got within my 3 meters plus or minus, and I'm going to do something with it. So, and that I'm not a coder. I've got some skills. I've gained skills in the last year and a half, but being able to pull all that stuff all together and start to change policy. And when you bring APIs in with the technology and the metadata that we have throughout the entire IMC system, it starts to be almost mind-boggling what you could do from a policy standpoint.
Yeah, it looks like HP Discover. Okay, we had in Barcelona, we have in Vegas, mid of this year. And when you go to the HP booth, HPN booth, for example, somebody asks you to scan your badge to know that you were there and you were seeing BYOD or 12500, 12900 switches, whatever. And imagine that you connect to the HP Wi-Fi at HP Discover, and you walk around and say, okay, for HP later, say, oh, Ethan spent 1 hour at HP network booth and 30 minutes in HP server and 5 minutes with storage. It's better to send him more information about HP networking because he has been there for more time.
Creepy and powerful, yeah.
Yeah. Well, but if you scan your badge, you do the same, you know, but manually. With this kind of stuff, when you go to the trade show for cars and say, okay, this kind of car, oh, hanging there and saying, oh, I like that. You want more information. So people, marketing people, they know where you were, you know, send more information to you.
What about integration? Chris, you mentioned a minute ago about IMC and about how this BYOD and access strategy is all integrated into IMC. But there's other parts of HP's product portfolio sister divisions that are they integrated into this too?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you're talking about the BYOD, what we're really providing here is that fingerprint. So there's the access management. BYOD is, you know, what does that term even mean? Right. Typically, depending who you're talking to, it's going to mean one of three things, which is access management, which is what we're talking about. It could mean VDI. Style infrastructure, so some of the stuff that Citrix would be talking to you about. And then the other one would be mobile device management or mobile application management, right? So from an MDM standpoint, what we've chosen to do is to not recreate the wheel. And there's some really great vendors out there like Mobile Iron, like Citrix offers an MDM solution as well. So we've chosen from a third party outside of HP to offer integrations directly into our policy architecture and work with those vendors. So we're able to then say, if we validate that your device is in policy according to the Mobile Iron server, we can use that as another trigger to be able to say, yes, you're allowed on or not, as the case may be. Hmm. And then Juliana, do you want to cover the tipping point?
Yeah, absolutely. Internally, we choose to integrate with tipping point with IPS because after the user connects to the network, has been authenticated, and okay, HP solution knows what kind of device the user they are using, apply the policy. What about if the user started running some bad code, bad traffic, virus, worms, whatever, and impact the network? IPS, you block that, but we need to remediate, we need to block the user, kick off the user out of the network. Okay, and for IPS, IPS is seeing the IP address and the MAC address, say, okay, who is that user, you know, with IMC? IMC integrate with IPS. IPS is sending a message to IMC saying, oh, this IP, this MAC is running bad traffic, so take care of him or her. And what IMC you do with policy manager, say, I know who is a user, I know the location, and my policy is to kick out the user from the network or to put the user in a guest VLAN. until the user has been fixed the issue, when the user comes back to the network, the policy manager, you allow the user connect again to the network. And we have this integration using APIs, SMP, with IPS, that's be real time.
So the IPS solution from Tipping Point is interesting, and it is part of the HP security family, and it is a IPS that is based on the DV Labs that detects threats, zero-day threats included. And so if you're pumping traffic through the IPS, what you're saying is, okay, rather than the IPS acting itself or by itself to clean up the dirty traffic that it sees, we're actually going to take a further step and say, hey, Tipping Point, tell the policy manager, the IMC policy manager, that there's a problem device here, and then update policy on that device that it's you're mitigating the threat somehow. You're kind of knocking that thing off the network. Did I get that right?
Yeah. So Juliana, correct me if I'm wrong on this one, but so basically another way to, I guess the technical way, I love that I can be technical. It's awesome. is that when you look at the radius communication of what's happening, the Tipping Point box is actually going to talk back to the policy manager, at which point the radius function within UAM, which is the policy manager, is going to change send a COA, a change of authorization packet, down to the switch level or AP level. And it's going to, at that point, based on the new policy, do things like flip VLANs, change ACLs, quarantine you completely. So if you look at a lot of the inline IPSs, what they're basically doing is they're just going into a captive portal mode. They're blocking your traffic at that point. So if you're infected, you can still infect everybody up until that security point, potentially. Right. So this actually will take you and knock you into a quarantine VLAN where you're as secure as a VLAN can make you.
Yeah, as you say, once you're in that VLAN, your traffic flows through a captive portal, which then you throws up an error. Well, if it's HTTP traffic anyway.
Yep.
Yeah.
So the captive portal would come into play if there's no radius, no integration, right?
Right.
So you're going up to the Tipping Point box, up to the IPS, and then you're getting cleaned there, and that's where the captive portal is kicking in. So everything on your side of the IPS is, if you've got a worm, is still susceptible to you infecting everybody who's sitting beside you. Whereas if you flip the VLAN attribute as, you know, the tunnel ID in the radius packet, you're actually logically taking Ethan, who has the dirty device, out of the VLAN with Greg, and we're putting him in a different VLAN where he's now quarantined. So there's no broadcast transmissions of viruses to Greg's machines. Sorry, Ethan.
So the question then becomes...
His machines don't get scanned because he's Ethan.
That's right. Don't you know who I am?
I get a shirt that says that.
How much of a burn is this on administrators? And listening to this going, okay, this sounds cool. You know, if I had Tipping Point and, you know, IMC and, you know, the wireless solution, it's all integrated. And I just, you know, punted someone into the quarantine VLAN because they were exhibiting bad behavior. How much did I as an administrator have to do to make that happen?
You have to set up the policies.
Okay.
You integrate the two together. So that integration, you have to point to say, I'm going to listen to this guy over here and have that conversation between the Tipping Point IPS or Tipping Point SMS, and SMS is their management platform, and the IMC policy server. So once that's done and your policies are set up, it then becomes all automated actions.
And then once something happens where some user device gets sent off into the bad place, is there, you know, what is my reaction at that point? Because I realize they go to a captive portal, and so now there's an opportunity for them to clean things up themselves in theory. Do I have to do anything as the IT administrator at that point?
Network administrator versus IT administrator, right? So you're going to have, at that point, if somebody's gone into a patched VLAN because there's a security issue, what's the policy? Do you try to clean it, or do you just reimage the whole box? You know, we've seen a lot of customers are going into, once you're infected, I'm not even going to bother with trying to clean you anymore.
Just level set, go back to a non-good image, yeah.
Right, so the answer to your question is really, what is the policy from the desktop side? How are they administering their desktop policies around things like patching, antivirus scanning, antivirus removal, not necessarily just antivirus, adware, all the above, right? Anything that could infect a PC, how do they deal with that? Which is typically not a network problem, network engineer problem anymore.
Now, it could be, depending on the policy, if the user can click the right things, they could get scanned and cleaned up and be okay, admitted back into the land of the living?
Yep, okay. It's possible.
It's possible. It's just, I'm just thinking, but I'm having a hard time imagining where that might actually get set up. I suppose in a really huge environment where there were thousands of endpoints, you might want to do that to try to offload IT staff as much as possible.
There was a move a while ago before BYOD, there was a remote access thing. And the idea was is that when your laptop connected to the network, say, let's say you'd left the been away on holidays for 2 weeks or a month, you know, and you'd come back and joined the corporate network, your laptop would now be out of date, right? Your virus images wouldn't have been able to contact the corporate server, your Windows patches. And so there used to be an agent that you could install on those laptops, which would then, when you connected to the network, would instantly drop you into a quarantine VLAN until your virus was updated and your malware and all your patches were fitted off, and then you could connect to the network. And that's one of the ideas that people say is, you know, maybe you go and travel to China for 2 weeks and you come back and then, you know, your laptop's out of date. I mean, 2 weeks in Microsoft time is about, you know, 500 megabytes of patches. I'm exaggerating. Not by much, though.
Not by much.
But you know what, you know, my point is, you don't want to patch a, you know, and put an unpatched machine on your network that's two weeks out of date or something like that.
Yeah, and honestly, we have those capabilities as well. There is an agent that we have that we could put on the machines. It could put on your Windows boxes and start looking at things like what services are you running, even as much as what processes are currently running on your machine. It's possible. We can do that stuff. We've got that in the portfolio. It's not used very often for the exact reasons that we talked about before. It's an agent on the machine, and now you start getting into, do I really want to restrict, get down to restricting, you know, you can't run XXX.exe doc, whatever. It's a good tool to have in your box. It's something I've never really seen used much. So we use that as part of the policy, just to, I guess, to get into a little bit of the details as another piece of metadata to say, once it's on, let it on the network, and then the agent is able to capture all that machine, that pre-authentication, gets onto the network, talks to the health server, and then the health server says, yeah, you're good to go, let them keep going. Or the health server says, no, and then it talks back to, it's very similar to with the tipping point solution, it'll talk back to the policy server and says, that guy there, this time it's Greg that's dirty, Greg's dirty, get him off, put him in quarantine, knock him off completely off the network, you know, what policy do we want at that point?
Maybe you just flag it up and then somebody manually intervenes. You never know.
And honestly, that's when we're looking at the projects that I've been involved with and that, like I said, there's not a lot that people choose to go that far. They typically will, from a health standpoint, that will be the initial assessment is they'll run it for like a month on just flag it and let them go. Because you don't really quite understand how those policies are going to affect things, and you don't want to create a resume-generating event where you're knocking CEOs off the network.
Right? So, to the CEO, I suppose.
This is true.
Okay, so we've been talking a good bit about integration that this solution has with a bunch of the other stuff in the HP family, but I also know that IMC is near and dear to your heart, Chris. So you got to tell me how this all fits in with IMC.
IMC is definitely, we've had a long run, me and her. it's actually older than two of my kids. I've been with it longer than two of my kids at this point. So IMC, and you can kind of listen to some of the other podcasts we've done on this, is a modular architecture, service-oriented architecture with a message bus flowing between it. So policy server we're talking about is actually the UAM, the User Access Manager, that is a completely, totally integrated part of IMC. And that's really what makes this really different than pretty much everything else in the industry right now, is that we're able through this communications bus to actually share information between the policy server and these different modules. And that becomes bidirectional, right? So we can bring in information from the other modules, or we can send information to the other modules. And where that becomes interesting is things like from a wireless management standpoint, right? If you don't have fingerprinting and wireless management together, those pieces of information together, then what do you know really about the clients on there when you're doing your wireless troubleshooting? Having that information to say this is a, I don't know, pick XYZ bad Chinese knockoff Android device that has a $2 radio in it. If you don't have that piece of information and that happens to be this important executive's, you know, he got it from his kids for his birthday, and the quality of it is always horrible, how are you ever going to know what the quality problem is? Whether that's are you having co-channel interference? Is there too many people on that AP? The problem actually is he's got a really bad tablet device.
Well, okay, so you're making a really kind of a key point here about IMC and its architecture, in that it's not just a branding exercise. And you said message bus with bidirectional communications to and from each module that's plugged into that message bus. So however expansive your IMC installation is, because of whatever modules you've bought, you get a synergy there between all these different modules as they exchange information.
Absolutely. So, you know, one of the other ones that is I find really, really interesting and really cool is that if you think about from a NetFlow, S-Flow, you know, X-Flow standpoint, coming into a collector, typically what you're going to get is you're going to get the, with the 5-tuple, so you're going to get the session IP, the destination IP, session port, destination port, and type of service, like all that kind of stuff that comes in. But that's an IP address. That's not a person. Mm-hmm. So what do you get with 802.1x as part of that packet? You actually get the IP address that was assigned through the accounting to the J4T account, right? So when you start looking at that and doing some trending and some analysis, we can actually go in and look at and say, show me for the user account, Giuliano Forti, show me what he was doing over this time frame. And because we now have the J40 account, which is bound, and we know historically he's had these four different IP addresses, or maybe he's got three different devices online that all have three different IP addresses associated with them, we can now say that Giuliano, this is all his traffic, independent of what IP he actually had at the time. So if he roams or accesses from other places, crosses layer three boundaries, it really doesn't matter. We can still pull out that data and tell what traffic belonged to that J40 account.
Yeah, pretty and my cool. account can consume 95% of the traffic, you know, of the bandwidth of the network. So my device can be infected, or I'm running an FTP server, you know, internally that I consume all bandwidth, you know. And the administrator can see through IMC, say, okay, so where is Giuliano, what he's doing, what kind of traffic, where the traffic is going through, and let me apply ACL to block his traffic because FTP shouldn't be running the network, and he's running FTP traffic right now and can do from a single pane of glass that with IMC. You know, and the other that I like to add for Chris about .1x authentication, we have seen in the past with some device when has a new OS version, the wireless stopped working and the authentication crashed. Okay, and how do we know the problem is the policy manager, the problem is the wireless, if you had different tools to work with? It takes a lot of time for troubleshooting. And for example, yesterday the CIO was able to connect to the network, but today is not able anymore. And what happened? And you can go to wireless service manager and say, oh, this device has a new iOS or new operating system, whatever. Yesterday it was running 8.0, now it's 8.1. Something is broken, and the authentication is fine because the user is not trying to authenticate yet. But the problem is the wireless communication, that the wireless is not working well, and you need to fix that. So it's pretty simple for the troubleshooting.
And that's, yeah, one of the ones that to put that in real concrete terms, you upgraded to Yosemite and your wireless went to crap, which is what we know happened. You know, Apple Yosemite came out, OS X, was it 10.10, whatever?
10.10,
and
yeah.
For the first 2 months, everybody was, I was really lucky that I didn't have any issues with mine. But it was all over Twitter, all over the blogs. It was constantly Apple.
Yep, we certainly did at my house. Had wireless issues with Yosemite that went away with
Apple released
10,
two patches,
two something like that.
Patches to deal with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So imagine from a policy standpoint, if you can suddenly say all of these users, they changed their OS to this, and then now you can have a start looking for trending within. If everybody, what do they have in common? You know, it's the typical. What changed and what do these things have in common if they're all having issues, right? And it's all Apple OS X boxes running Yosemite, this version of code, which we can grab through that fingerprinting. Now we have something to sink our teeth into and go, sorry.
Sorry. Not, you say it in Canada that way, that you'd say sorry. Everyone else would say, look, see what you did? See what you did?
I was actually thinking of various other more unpolite words, but... You see it your way, I'll see it mine.
Yeah, sorry, you're right. That's a problem.
Yeah, it's the same for location aware. So imagine that everybody complain about, I cannot access the network. So a lot of tickets has been opened to the support. So in that location, nobody were able to authenticate because it's a wireless issue. On that spot or that spot, whatever, You know, so we need to upgrade the AP, we need to put more AP. So the troubleshooting is easier than traditional way.
Yeah, so it's really, you know, to wrap that up, it's correlating data between these different modules that, and somebody came up with this awesome term, swivel chair management, which I just, the mental picture it gives you is perfect. Yeah. Instead of having to go to management station one for network management, management station two for OS management, management station three for wireless management, four over to your policy server. It's all integrated together and allows you in one interface to be able to see and have all these correlations between them. And are we doing everything we can with that data? Absolutely not. So that's one of the things that we're trying to do is come up with more things to be able to look at as the product improves. What other use cases can we have when we have these data points and put them together and just mash them up and come up with stuff that, because of the metadata access that we have in the entire system, I'm not aware of anybody else who could even think about doing the stuff that we have right now. So it's
no, you know,
the analytics moving forward is going to be amazing.
Well, analytics is going to be powerful in every way we go forward. Like if you look at what OpenFlow, you know, flow-based systems, of which OpenFlow is the basis for everybody building them, this idea of devices tracking flows instead of packets is really powerful because it gives us visibility into the data. But the flip side of visibility is you also get control. Effectively, what you're talking about is taking data flows, analyzing them as security data or policy data for BYOD systems, and then systemically taking the APIs that you present. So that data richness, that capability that we now have with new hardware and new ways of thinking about software, and turn it into a policy-managed access control system. Or, you know, or a BYOD-type capability that we just weren't able to build 10 years ago.
Couldn't have said it better.
And that's really what it is, right? You're talking about, yep. You know, if you go back to the technologies that we were discussing in the earlier sections, the idea of fingerprinting, looking at a flow and then fingerprinting flows of data. So what's the MAC? What's the DHCP options? What's in the HTTP headers? What signals can I take from the flow to say this is what the device is? And then everybody's been able to do fingerprinting for a long time, IDSs, but nobody's been able to activate that into a coherent policy capability. So if you match these criteria, send you to the captive portal, let you log in, another security step. Maybe I need to divert you up to the tipping point to be able to do deep scanning of the data for some reason. Maybe I want to be able to classify you according to wireless location or mobile device management indication. Maybe I want to integrate and say, now you've passed a certain base level, flip it to the mobile device manager and say, check this for virus status or operating system updates, or is my mobile device management, is this a recognized device in my system? And then, you know, the whole system sort of starts to come together. And you're saying, now this is all part of IMC. So it actually snaps into the console and you don't actually have to have, you know, log into a different system. It's all part of a single login in IMC. You just go to that module and start looking at what you need to know. Did I get that right?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely it. And again, you made it sound really complicated. You could do that.
Yeah.
Just because you can doesn't mean you should, right?
Oh, you could break it down right. To something a lot simpler. Right?
Yeah, it might be just, we don't own this device corporately.
Yep.
You go in this VLAN.
Or you have to be, yeah, I don't recognize that device. Why aren't you using the VPN?
Exactly, right? Yeah. So you have, the world is your oyster, make the policy decision you want, but just make sure it's something that you can A, live with, and B, troubleshoot.
Okay, I think we're getting down to the point where we've pretty much covered it. I mean, I'm getting pretty interested in this idea of, this isn't software-defined, but it's kind of similar to software-defined networking that we talk about in other places, like in the data center, this ability to use software to do smart stuff. This is kind of in that vein. Is that a reasonable assumption, Chris, that this idea of bringing everything together?
The marketing guy in me will let that be software-defined.
Okay. But it's a long bow, but conceptually it's not that far away.
Conceptually, and the definition that the industry has started to gravitate towards, it's using software to do interesting things. So yes, it's software-defined. Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not too happy about that, but I'm trying to get the principle across rather than call it software, you know, SD something. Well, on that note, perhaps we should just hit it. Now, Chris, where can people go to find more information about this?
Absolutely. You can get to www.hp.com/go/BYOD. Yep. And the other one, of course, for all things IMC would be hp.com/networking/IMC. And really all the free trials, 60-day free trials of pretty much every platform and every module you could possibly want is available at those links. So check it out.
Oh, so free trial. So you can have a bit of a play. You can download it to VM, I assume?
60-day, there is a Smart Connect appliance that's available as a VM. Yeah, absolutely. That's an OVA. Or you can install it on Red Hat, or you can install it on Windows. It's really what flavor do you like?
Okay. So there's a method to get it into any organization. I'm pretty sure HP covers that sort of stuff pretty well.
Yep, absolutely.
They don't force you to make a decision. They let you choose which one fits your needs.
Sometimes it would be nice if we just forced them.
Yeah.
You know, customers, which one do I do? I'm like, well, you can, which one do you want to do? Which one's right for you?
Choose the one. Just choose one. You don't have to have every other, you know, every possible flavor.
Yeah. Yeah. We try to opt on the giving of choice.
Okay.
As a culture.
Well, on that note, thanks very much for joining the show this week. And thanks for listening to Packer Pushers. And thanks to HP Networking for once again sponsoring us. We should be back again in a week or so. So make sure that you come back. I'd like to thank Chris Young from HP. Chris, tell the people where they can find you.
So you can find me on Twitter as @NetmanChris. I'm probably going to be doing some more posts soon on my personal blog at Control Issues with a K. And hopefully I'll be hanging out with the rest of the cool kids at Interop in about a month. So if anybody's there,
make sure
try to find me.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, well, I think we're trying to try and organize a meetup somewhere. I'm not sure yet. We're still working on the details and getting calendars together. So hopefully, but I know we'll definitely look forward to catching up with you and having a chinwag.
Absolutely.
And Giuliano, where can people find you on the internet?
Yeah, I'm not a Twitter guy like Chris, you know. You can find me by my email, julian.forti@hp.com, and it would be my pleasure to answer any mail from the field. So I have been working with BYD for a few years, and I'm here to help everybody.
Thanks so very much. Mr. Banks, any closing thoughts? Some dulcet tones of wisdom to sing us out?
You know, BYOD is one of those things I said, you know, who cares? Just screw it. And then I hear this and it's like, okay, the solution is there now. You can actually do something useful with it. And it makes me not want to say screw it. It makes me want to actually look into it again. And so, yeah, I'm good about that. I'm good with this. I want to look into this more. Anyway, IDC Banks on Twitter, and you can see my blog, ethancbanks.com.
Yeah, I'm like you. I wasted a significant part of my life on 802.1x deployments that I'm never going to get back. And this sounds like it might actually be a little bit having to rely on Microsoft to put an agent in its operating system that never was going to go well. I don't know why we even thought so, to be honest. So I'm Greg Farrow. You can find me on my blog at etherealmind.com or on the Twitter as @etherealmind. We'd love to hear your feedback about today's show, so send emails to packetpushers@gmail.com and let us know what you're thinking. Alternatively, check out the podcast website at packetpushers.net, leave comments on today's show, or follow us on the Twitter as @packetpushers. This has been Packet Pushers Weekly, and remember that too much networking would never be enough.